This is tape two of the interview with Dr. David Anderson. We were talking about the decline in speaking abilities of both students and faculty members. And you think that decline has continued to the present?
Yes. I notice it in junior faculty. I notice it in some who are becoming senior faculty. In fact, sometimes I'll sit there listening to one thing. God, I feel sorry for his students. Seriously.
Going back to the Declaration of Independence, did you have any particular favorite technique that you used to get students at least to think about the concepts, intellectual concepts that it raised?
Well, I focused on the revolutionary nature of these ideas. Mm-hmm. To suggest, for example, that all men are created equal. Think of that. There may be physical differences, there may be biological differences, temperamental differences, but talent differences, but all men are created equal. You and you and you and you and even me. You know, and all of these, all the ideas of the Declaration, the idea that human beings have certain natural rights. And these are not rights that are given by government. They're not privileges. They are inherent rights. Life, liberty, and property. Mm-hmm. Or the pursuit of happiness. But either way, property is your idea of pursuing happiness by accumulating property, so be it. That's your privilege. Mm-hmm. And, they're really tremendous ideas. Mm-hmm. And in the 18th century, they were revolutionary ideas. Mm-hmm. And they're still revolutionary ideas. Because think of all the places in the world where natural rights may exist, but they're not recognized. Mm-hmm. Human equality is not recognized. All you have to look at all these ethnic and tribal conflicts and religious conflicts all over the world.
The whole concept of getting students to think about class as an issue, mm-hmm. it seems like the Declaration is an ideal way to approach that. Mm-hmm. Was there, in terms of, again, going back to your teaching, did you prefer lecture or?
Primarily lecture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I am in the Emerson, Schuck, Russell, Nye tradition.
And the attack on that method seems to be unfounded.
Well, I never had a student complain about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a test of something.
Yeah. In my own training, some of the only problem with the great lectures that I had was you didn't want to take notes; you just wanted to say.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But
they made it look so easy.
My mentors, my models, were both the kinds of lecturers that were presented in such a clear, chronological, almost outline form. So that taking notes is really a natural part of the process. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've always attempted to do.
Mm-hmm. So your relationship between, it was Schuck, was it?
Emerson Schuck
and Russ Nye continued right throughout?
Right to the end, to their deaths, both of their deaths.
Mm-hmm. And popular culture, how did that fit into your own scholarship? You tended to emphasize the literature aspect?
What I'm interested in primarily is literature. Mm-hmm. That may happen to be popular. Mm-hmm. And I use the term popular very loosely. I don't think a book has to be a bestseller to be considered a popular work. Mm-hmm. Certainly Weinsberg, Ohio is popular. Mm-hmm. It has never been out of print since it was published in 1919. So that my book is popular. Mm-hmm. And of course, many of the leading writers that I'm interested in have also had a number of bestsellers. Sinclair Lewis had many bestsellers. Dreiser had a number of bestsellers. One of the contemporary I'm most interested in is Saul Bellow. And Bellow, of course, has had his share of bestsellers. Ravelstein, his new novel, was number 8 in the New York Times list for 1 week. So that qualifies as a bestseller. Mm-hmm. And certainly a popular work. There, I think popular is probably best defined the way I use it as durable.
Durable. Hmm.
If it lasts, if it speaks to more than one generation or more than one age or more than one class of people, then I think it's popular work.
Mm-hmm. What year did you retire officially from the university?
I think January of 94.
Mm-hmm. In January of 94.
Yeah.
And your scholarship has continued, certainly.
Yeah.
What's your most recent project that you're working on?
I am putting together a book of essays, my own essays on Sherwin Anderson. Mm-hmm. And they are re-evaluations of Anderson. My first book on Anderson came out in 67. That's over 30 years, and I'm looking at them from through different eyes in many respects, mm-hmm. and certainly different sensibilities. So it will cover essentially the same territory as my 67 book, but it will look at things in many respects in a different light.
How have you, let's go back to during your career, any activities that you had outside of academia, in terms of within the community that you, was there any link with your scholarship or political activity? Clubs you're active with?
Not a whole lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For quite a while you were active in a club called the UNI Club, mm-hmm. which was a group of Lansing and East Lansing residents who... The club began, I think, in 1883.
Oh.
I was president for its centenary in 1983. But met once a week during the winter, and one member of the club would present a paper on some topic of interest. Only two topics were verboten, politics and religion. Any other topic was that the person wanted to present was acceptable, and of course it was a very wide range of interests, and very, very interesting stuff. The group just kept getting older and older, and I'm told this happens to a lot of groups. So finally, in the last year or so, it's been virtually inactive.
Mm-hmm.
Young people aren't joining them, and the old people are dying off. But I've been active in other things in the community from time to time. Not a hell of a lot, because I've been keeping pretty busy with my others.
And you've still been active in SSML.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Activities in that. Were you ever a Fulbright scholar? Or
yes.
Could you talk a little bit about that experience?
Well, I was Fulbright lecturer at the University of Karachi in Pakistan, 63-64. Was reappointed 3 times, and each time something came up that prevented me from accepting them. But it was a major experience, obviously, and I think I did some good in introducing American literature to some bright young Pakistanis, some of whom came to this country for further study. One of them even became a student of mine here. I directed his dissertation here.
I see.
Okay. So he's back in Peshawar, University of Peshawar. But
have you, in terms of your international travel, you've continued with scholarly papers around the world?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I manage at least one international conference a year, I think. I don't have any plan for this year. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to go to Zimbabwe, and I decided not to. Mm-hmm. For, I think, obvious reasons. My health isn't that good. Mm. But I do plan to go to France this fall to set up a conference for probably 2002 mm-hmm. in Paris on Midwestern writers and the City of Light. Mm-hmm. Midwestern writers who have spent time in Paris and whose work was influenced by mm-hmm. by France and the French and the international dimension. And there are a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Hemingway, obviously, but who were some of the others? Well, besides Hemingway.
Most recently, James Jones spent 20 years there. Bellow spent a couple of years there, wrote most of Augie March in France. Mm-hmm. And the list is almost... Well, almost every writer has had some measure of experience there. But, of mm-hmm. course, the writers of the 20s, I think they had the most profound experiences there because they could stay there longer. The dollar was much more valuable in terms of French francs. The franc was way down and the dollar was way up, so they could live on virtually nothing, which, of course, hasn't been the case for writers in more recent years. Mm-hmm. Unless they make a lot of money writing. But I thought that would be an interesting focal point for mm-hmm. a conference and an interesting place to have it. Mm-hmm. A number of people have said that they certainly will come mm-hmm. and will participate, so I hope that that is indeed the case.
Sounds like an interesting conference.
Working on another conference, which will be next year, the 125th anniversary of Sherwood Anderson's birth. Mm-hmm. Actually, the 125th anniversary of his birth, and it'll be the 41, 51, 62, 71, 81, 60th anniversary of his death.
Mm-hmm. So your scholarly work then is really...
Pardon?
Your scholarly work is keyed centrally on Anderson, right up to the...
Well, it keeps me busy. My life is really not that much different in retirement than it was before. The only difference is I don't go to class.
Don't go to class, don't have the papers to grade.
Yeah, that makes a lot of difference. Yeah.
Maybe just a final question, in looking back on your entire career at Michigan State, what would you say or how would you assess your experiences here at Michigan State University?
Well, I'm still here. And I think that's probably the most profound comment I can make. I have enjoyed my life here. I've enjoyed the colleagues. I've enjoyed the university. I've enjoyed the students. I've thought that I've had wonderful opportunities to do what I wanted to do in the scholarly dimension. I have been thought about leaving on a number of occasions. We had an interesting experience last week. Incidentally, we went up to Mount Pleasant for a wedding. And I've had three job offers over the years from Central Michigan, one as a professor, as a chairman, and as a dean. Mm-hmm. And I didn't take any of them, obviously. But anyway, on the way back, my wife said, "I'm glad you didn't take any of those jobs." But I think it's been a wonderful experience, certainly. One that in which I think I made some contributions. I have a strong loyalty to both the university and the profession. And I think to a great extent, both are the result of my experiences here. And I certainly would recommend the place. I recommend it to parents all the time. I say, you can get the best education in the world here, if you're careful. Mm-hmm. If you want to play and have an easy time, you can do that too, but you're not going to get a good education. Mm-hmm. But you pick your classes, pick your instructors, and you will get a good education.
Well, I want to thank you on behalf of the project for the time that you've spent and your insights. Thank you.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.